six, five, four, three, two, one, zero. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Welcome back to the Real Bourbon Bros podcast, the essential podcast for the novice yet curious whiskey enthusiast. Giddy up. Welcome back, everybody, to the Real Bourbon Bros podcast. My name is Gary. Tonight, very excited about this. We will be bringing you exclusively our part one interview at the Evan Williams Experience with Bernie Lubbers, brand ambassador, and also Jody Filitru, one of the artisanal distillers. Again, Evan Williams Experience, Evan Williams Bourbon, Evan Williams part of Heaven Hill. So we talk shop, we talk whiskey, we talk life. We broke it up into two different parts because we had about an hour with the gentleman. So this is part one, beginning Steve and I talking to Bernie, and then Jody will join us later. Enjoy and giddy up.
So cool. you travel around the world. Are you talking, I mean, more domestically?
Or of course, domestically. 95% of our business is here. And but I've been over to Europe three times with our company, going over again next summer.
Wow.
And, you know, that's our biggest growth is going to be.
That's what I've heard.
On-premise here in the United States. We're only 8% on-premise.
Okay.
We built the company off-prem in liquor stores because it was family-owned. They didn't see slow, sustainable growth. No need to push a number, right? So until we've gotten to a certain size, and then
okay.
So now, but you know, so I'd rather be us than the other distillery. They're in lots of bars. We're not. Yeah. They're in a lot. You know, Jack Daniel's is 60% international. We're 5.
Yeah.
Beam's 50% international. We're 5. So we got a lot of growth.
A lot of shelf stock, I'm sure, for Jack Daniel's and Jim Beam.
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, you know, you're trying to push more the cask strength and the higher
international
top tier.
We're pushing whatever they over.
I don't know if international. They probably don't like the cask strength as much, from my experience.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're 20 years behind. You know, 10 years behind. You know, when I started, nobody wanted cask strength here. Nobody wanted anything over 6 years old here.
That's our favorite. We love the
everybody
cask
here
strength,
now
so.
Wants old and strong. Back 20 years ago, nobody wanted old and strong.
That's probably true.
No, it is. That's what was going on. I worked at Jim Beam, and you couldn't give Booker's away.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
What's your best seller in terms of Heaven Hill products? Just Elijah.
Well, it's Evan Williams. The Black Label. It's the number two selling bourbon in the world. Okay. So it outsells Maker's Mark, outsells Wild Turkey, outsells Bullet, outsells everything but Jim Beam. And then Elijah Craig's, number two selling small batch. So
small batch,
overtook Knob Creek last year.
Nice. Yeah, we love. I think we always say, like, for the price, Elijah Craig. You can't beat that for the price.
I mean, those are the two barrels proof.
The small batch, yeah, mm-hmm. The good proof
in small batch and toasted
94. It's just, we love it.
Yeah, but anything we have that's, you know, I mean, we've been around for 90 years, so we can't just start charging $80 for something that, even though it's worth it.
Right,
it's just you just can't do it.
Yeah, even
we have products that are, you know, several hundred dollars each.
Right,
but it's just that's why we acquired Samson and Surrey, and it's why you acquire other brands. They've already got the price point established.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's just hard for us, and we get called everything under the sun if we try to raise anything $5.
Yeah, so. And I think personally, like Elijah Craig Barrel Proof is on par with like Stag, and I think it's that or above.
If it was Michter's, it'd be $400 a bottle. Well, nobody
that's
would,
what I'm
nobody
saying.
Would care.
How juice it is.
Nobody
you know
would
so.
Care.
We right. love it. Like.
I mean, shit, they get away with everything. We raise the price $5, and we're assholes, right?
Well, we love it. We love a lot of the products. We love it. It's popular too.
We recommend probably more of that product than the higher top tier product because people want to, you know, they're entering and we're appealing to the crowd, which are the enthusiasts and the people that are, you know, asking us, you know, how do I, you know, I love this stuff. You know, it's like, this is like sugar. Mm-hmm. Where do I start? And like Elijah Craig, Larceny, Evan Williams is like, this is where you should base it on. And,
absolutely.
But that's your bar, you know, and it's a pretty high bar.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, you go from there. And so it'd be pretty hard. I mean, and so you have a little subtle differences between, you know, the Well, we're like barrel proof guys. Yeah. So
well, the mash bills too.
The mash bills.
Craig definitely different mash bills.
And so you set your bar there. Then it's like, okay, if you don't like that, now you know, take a step back and go to your Heaven Hill. You know, and your bottle and bond and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and
then that bottle, that's
the bottle and bond is probably my favorite bottle and bond.
Over
McKenna's and stuff.
Yeah,
that's probably my favorite bottle and bond. I tell people bottle and bond, Heaven Hill.
Yeah, it's a good place to start.
That's the one.
It's a good proof. Yeah,
absolutely.
So
that's awesome.
And the government gets their input on that too.
Absolutely,
well, sure.
They get their input on everything.
So this is the...
This mellow corn. That's where I always like to start, because if it wasn't for aged corn whiskey, there wouldn't be bourbon today.
That's true. I've never had this.
I've had this.
The law of brand new barrel is only since 1938. So if you drink anything, if you were around before 1938, if there's no law saying you have to use a brand new barrel, are you going to use a brand new barrel as a distillery? Probably not.
No.
So this is more indicative of... anything that was made before
bottle and bond,
well, and with the aged corn whiskey, it's not gonna, there was no law for a brand new barrel until 1938.
Okay,
It seems to drink higher than 100 proof, though.
Well, it's the reason it's in a used barrel,
Mm-hmm.
In a used barrel, you're not getting as much vanilla, honey, and caramel,
right?
You're getting, the grain, the grain flavor is gone, but the corn flavor remains. So you're not getting the graininess of a very young bourbon whiskey, and this is not a bourbon, this is a corn whiskey.
Right.
So the law of corn whiskey states it must be at least 80% corn, and this is, but there's a little barley, it's 12% barley, 8% rye, but you're not really tasting the spice of the rye because it's in a used barrel. It's like using a tea bag the second time. But the corn flavor will always remain, whether this is 4 years old like this is, or 20 years old like our Heaven Hill Heritage that came out a couple years ago. It was 20-year corn.
Nice.
So this just shows that where bourbon came from. There would not be bourbon today if it wasn't for aged corn whiskey.
Yeah, I've seen this bottle of the yellow corn throughout, I live in Tampa, like I said earlier, throughout the area.
It's down there.
Yeah, it's a very, every time I see it, there's only one or two bottles on the shelf because the rest of it has been sold out. So I know it's a popular bottle.
Yeah, it's not a huge selling product, but it's a great product. It's one of the only few aged corn whiskeys on the market.
It's good to have that, I think, here in collection, you know.
Well,
you want to diversify your portfolio.
If you're going to want to know what bourbon tastes like, you got to know where it came from. So this is one of the origin stories of bourbon.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah, this would be indicative of anything that was sold in the 1800s when they first started aging things in barrels to, again, the law of bourbons, 1938.
Here, because I had to plug in. Okay. When did they start making the mellow corn? When did you guys start? 1945. 45. I think my eyes
shut. This is a this is a product we acquired in the '80s, I believe.
Okay.
So it's from Medley. It's from the Medley Distillery in Owensboro.
Nice.
So that's why it has the Medley. Yeah. Medley crest. Have you ever seen?
Oh wow.
Wathen's.
Uh-huh.
That's the Medley crest. So we acquired that brand. You know, our company, Heaven Hill, never sold a brand. We have only acquired brands in our 90-year history. So when the bourbon industry was having a hard time, and we never really recovered after Prohibition as an industry. After Prohibition, you had the big four distiller companies.
Mm-hmm.
Know that... I was just in Michigan, right? So
nice.
They had the big three automakers.
Yep.
Yeah.
So the big four.
Yeah, Chrysler, Ford.
So the big four were Schenley, National Distillery, Seagram's, and Hiram Walker. And they dominated the whiskey world in North America. Then you had your companies like Scotch and, your Johnny Walkers, your
blended
Doers,
Scotches,
but your Cutty Sark, which was a huge brand back in the day. You know, during Prohibition, we all went out of business. Had to by law.
Yep.
After Prohibition,
it's medicinal.
Can you imagine giving your competitors a 4-year head start?
No.
Because you got to build a distillery, you got to put it in a barrel, you got to wait four years for it to be bottled and bond. So everybody got a 4-year head start. So that's why the industry really never recovered.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how many barrels were kind of hidden away, I should say?
During Prohibition?
I mean, if you speculate, right?
Well, so we would pretty much know if you look at the records for the Kentucky Distillers Association, that number's around. But everybody had barrels in their warehouse, but only six distilleries had a license to sell, a medicinal license to
sell. That's what they do, medicinal.
So we weren't around, so we didn't have it. We had zero. But Beam had some, but they didn't have a medicinal license. But there's, if you talk to Fred Noe over there, he'll tell you there was a lot of squirrely things that went around because there was laws about it. But of course,
from Michigan, with
there's
Canada.
A lot of bourbon sitting around in barrels. So you could go in and tap those barrels, fill it back up with water, and no one's the wiser, right? So there was a lot of stuff that went on that was.
Sure.
You had to make a living.
Well, they didn't have enough people to check everything.
Yeah.
They were chasing bootleggers and moon. They were chasing everybody. They couldn't chase everybody.
George Remus.
But it was an amazing part of history, but afterwards, the distilleries opened back up. Again, your competitors get a 4-year head start. So that's why, and in the 50s, 60s, and 70s especially, you had tequila and vodka come into the U.S. market, and that dominated.
Saturated.
And it almost made us go as our owner, because we're still family-owned. Our owner says we almost went to the great liquor store in the sky. But we were always financially stable. This was our side hustle. The family owned department stores. This was a play for the thing. And we started acquiring brands. So we acquired Mellow Corn. We acquired Rittenhouse Rye. We acquired Pikesville Rye. We acquired Old Fitzgerald. We acquired all these brands. So as they went out of business, we became. The power of that is you buy the barrels and inventory too, so you don't have to make it.
Right,
yeah,
it's already there. So, but that's expensive. Yeah. But the family was always in smart and savvy how they did it. So, yeah, it's a cool piece of history. That's why you look at distilleries like Jim Beam, own Old Granddad and Old Overholt. I mean, they didn't start those; they acquired those. So that's how this happened.
Yeah. That's a good.
It's either you make it or you acquire it.
It's a good way to make
up. Once you acquire it, you start making it.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a good way to catch up. Right.
Well, you see if it's going to sell and if you whatever.
Or a brand that's already established. Right. Then you already know it's a good product. It's a good investment that way. Yeah. Depends on the price, obviously. But the Mellow Corn is definitely a good place to start.
You mentioned
the two ryes, the Rittenhouse. And the Pikesville, those are two of my favorite for $30 and $50. You know those price points. I love them. I mean, I think right now for $30, probably the best rye I can get. Price per quality pour, I think it's right
price
up there.
Price per quality pour, that's what we tend
trademark
to chase after.
So at Heaven Hill, we're different in many ways. Our house style is very much different than a lot of our competitors or all of our competitors. But we make we just had a corn whiskey. And we make two different types of bourbon. We make a rye whiskey, a wheat whiskey, and we make malt whiskey.
Yep.
Those were six recipes we make on a regular basis. And most distilleries don't do that. So most distilleries make one bourbon or a bourbon and a rye, maybe two
different
recipes of bourbon and a rye. But that's it. They usually push one or two brands and try to sell as much as you can. That's the capitalist way, right?
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with it. But we're family owned, so we're not owned by stockholders, other than the family. So, you tend to how in the world do you compete? You know, Max Shapiro in our family, Kate and Allen, our co-presidents, his daughter and son-in-law. How in the world? I describe Heaven Hill as the Reno, Nevada of distilleries. You know Reno's tagline or slogan. You know their line.
The largest little city.
No. You're almost there. The biggest little city in the world.
Biggest little city, yeah.
Close.
So, I describe Heaven Hill as the biggest little distillery in the world. So, we're big because we're big. We have the second largest selling bourbon in the world, Evan Williams. We own 2.1 million barrels. That's 20% of the world's bourbon supply.
2.1 million.
Beam owns 3 million, so that's 30%. So between us and Beam, we're half of the bourbon's world.
Crazy.
We make 1,500 barrels a day. We're building another distillery. That's not even enough. We have already have the world's or one of the world's largest single-site bourbon distilleries. We're building another one.
Wow.
So we're big, but we're also small because we're family-owned.
Right. So and that's, I think, the key. That's the key to keeping that product, a good quality product as well. Everybody knows
and
each other.
And we can do things our competitors choose not to do, they have advantages over us.
Right.
We have advantages over them. So that's all you do as a company is our competitors make great whiskey.
Yeah.
We can't say we make better whiskey than our competitors, but we can certainly say we can certainly say we make it different.
Right.
And that puts our house mm-hmm. style on it and our fingerprint on it and makes it different. So nobody else makes as many styles of whiskey as we do.
Mm-hmm. The variety.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, I love that as a good starter. And then this is the, which one would you suggest going to?
We're going to go to Evan Williams next.
Small batch. Yeah,
because this is what aged corn whiskey became. So help yourself.
The evolution.
Yeah. And that's a tasting that I do when I go on the road. I'll do what I call the evolution of bourbon tasting. We'll actually start with Georgia Moon first, which is this mellow corn recipe, same recipe, but it's unaged. So it's unaged corn whiskey, or as I call it, Blanco whiskey.
So this is the Evan Williams 1783.
This is the 1783 small batch. So this is our regular Evan Williams.
This is better. I mean, very mellow corn, you get a lot of that.
This is balanced. This is balanced.
Yeah. Mellow corn's not a bourbon. You can't judge it against that. So you just got to turn your brain different.
It's a different. Yep.
So this is what bourbon became. So in the late 1700s, early 1800s, we were drinking unaged corn whiskey. So that would be the first evolution. That's what I do if we were doing this tasting on the road. We start there. And then you just taste that pure corn and that sweetness, and that's what made it different than the rye whiskeys they were making up in Pennsylvania, New York, and Maryland.
Yeah.
Even unaged, it was a little sweeter and had that corn flavor. Mm. And then it gets in this used barrel as it's shipped down from Louisville and other places in Kentucky, down the Ohio River. Everybody always says New Orleans, but everybody forgets to include Henderson and Owensboro Paducah, Kentucky, and St. Louis, which was the major city before you even take the left-hand turn to get all the way. There was nothing in between St. Louis and New Orleans. So when it got down to New Orleans, it was more like mellow corn. And then in the early 1800s and mid-1800s, late 1800s, You're using. They knew the barrel had positive effects. You know, it was just a way to transport it before, and they knew that burning the inside of the barrel is what they all did because we got barrels from Pittsburgh and Philadelphia and upriver, and they had pickling agents, brine, salts, vinegars, things like that. And you didn't want to put your whiskey into that barrel, so you burned it out. So that's what caused this color. Oh, they learned that.
Is that so?
Yeah.
So they. Okay, so they burned it out to get rid of the kind of the
to sterilize it taste. To make it to be able to receive, and that pulled that sugars the sugars in the wood to the edge of the inside edge of the barrel, and then when it got hot, it went in and out of that wood, and that's you know.
Well, that was before they had the bourbon come along, the bonded, where new American oak and so forth.
Well, even in the Bottle and Bond Act of 1897, it didn't specify what kind of barrels or oak.
Not new.
No, that wasn't put until
American oak.
1938.
Yeah,
so there was none of that.
We used a lot of the barrels. Yeah.
And
there's no law. So what are you going to do?
Right. Exactly.
So barrels are expensive, hard to get. Yeah. So you're going to use a combination.
That's why I was like, wow, this is a new barrel. Every time you see a barrel roll out,
is the most. Back then. So bring it to recent. The most. So let's start with the Evan Williams 1783 small batch. Is that like Ozark oak?
Yeah. So we have two main cooperages that we use, and they're both yes, most of the timber and that comes from it is from the Ozarks. Okay. So both of those companies are based in Missouri.
Okay.
So you have McGinnis Wood Products out of Cuba, Missouri, and then we have Independent Stave Company out of Lebanon, Missouri, but it's also in Lebanon, Kentucky. So so those are the two. I don't know. They have cooperages in Australia, and I wonder if it's Lebanon, Australia.
Yeah, exactly. Or Lebanon.
Yeah. So most of the wood comes there, even though if they're put together, the wood probably still comes from the Ozarks. Now, we do have, there is some white oak that we have here in Kentucky and Tennessee, but most of it comes from the Ozarks. So we do not own our own cooperages. We have been doing stuff with the, those families, the McGinnis and the...
So you've stayed in that family for a while then, like the same cooperage?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've been around for 90 years, so... It's the same cooperage. It's a, I can't say that. We've we had Zach's. We used to do stuff with Zach's, and we used to do stuff with others, but, you know, now Zach's is, I think, is owned by Sazerac, so...
Yeah.
So, you know, things happen. Things
right,
happen
exactly. There. History.
But...
no, it's a nice pour.
We have a great relationship with our coopers, and you know that those prices change. You know they're like market prices.
Yeah, so
those prices change all the time. But this is we use a number three char.
Okay,
it's another part of our house style. Is when I tell people when they go to distilleries, find out all the little stuff and the big stuff. So you know, the recipe accounts for 25% of the flavor of a finished product. You know, the distillation itself is responsible for 15% of the final flavor. Mm. The yeast strain, we have our own proprietary yeast strain.
Nice.
It's 10% of the final product, and then aging is 50.
Wow.
Plus. Now, it's a sliding scale.
Right.
So if you age it longer, the aging might go up to 70%. Right.
Sure.
You know, yeah. Whatever. So... If you know, but if we used a pot still like we use here at Evan Wayne's Bourbon Experience, or if we use a column still, then that's probably going to taste 15% different. Speaking of stills, here's Jody Filiatri, our artisanal distiller.
That was a good tie-in.
Yeah, nice. I like how you did that.
Hi, Steve. Steve, how you doing?
Steve and Gary.
Gary,
how are you?
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Pull up a chair here.
The real bourbon bro.
Pull up a chair here, Jody.
Oh, yeah.
I'm showing off some of your shit you make here.
He's wearing a square of six shirts.
Yeah, we haven't gotten to the square of six yet. Sure. That's our next one.
Have you tried that yet?
No, that's
not. Oh, nice.
We're working our way up to it, Jody.
Okay, we're good.
Yeah, we went to the Yellow Corn. We've been to the Evan Williams 1783 small batch. And
gotcha.
We're just chit-chatting and
awesome.
Learning some new things for us and our listeners. So, yeah, it's been great.
Yeah, well, very good. Cool. Well, the Square Six bourbon, I mean, we did bourbon that we're going to do. So that was made here.
We did bourbon.
So I was telling first about the evolution, Jody.
Oh,
so
sure,
that's
sure.
Why we tasted mellow corn first, and now we're on the 1783.
Gotcha.
I'll pour you some 1783. You know, this is the way this is different than our regular black label Evan Williams, which is the number two selling bourbon in the world. This has a little more age, a little more proof on it.
Yes.
So this is it's got a little more mingle of barrels that are you know, the black labels probably 4 and 5, 6 year old barrels mingled together. These are a little bit older, mingled together too. And the regular Evan Williams black label is 86 proof, and this is 90. So less water's been put into it, so it's going to stand up.
It's a nice proof.
I think my boys would, you know, the non-bourbon drinkers in my group would really like this.
Oh, right. This is
a small
bag. This is an insider secret. Yeah. This is not a big selling item for us.
No, this is...
It kind of just, you know...
I don't think I've had this.
Under the radar, under the radar whiskey.
It is a great price. It's a great price, and, you know, I'll put it up against any small batch bourbon in the world. And if you tasted this blind with some of the other great, amazing small batch bourbons in the world, there's zero advertising done on this product.
Right?
So we save all that money, right? So we're not buying billboards for this. We're not buying, you know... magazine ads for this.
And can you find this in any of your local liquor stores?
You should pretty much find it in every store in the United States. You just haven't been looking for it.
Right. It's there.
Well, that's,
you just got to open your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
No, and I think for...
We can do our share.
I would definitely recommend
it. This is...
That's a great example of a good bourbon that nobody knows about.
Right. And under the radar.
Under the radar.
Yeah.
So Jody's been with our company for 43 years.
Wow. Yeah, 43 years, yeah.
And, you know, so... I was
a family, or
no, I was a 20-year-old kid looking for a job.
Wow, that's pretty awesome.
That's a pretty good game.
Yeah, just had turned 20, and, looking for a job, so they got hired and done various jobs throughout the company. Everything from a laborer on second shift to label machine operator, loaded trucks on a forklift. Worked at the old distillery. Got to see how Parker Beam did his job, and you know, rolled barrels for over 25 years up the barrel warehouse.
Wow.
So, so then I'm maturated.
Don't get in a fight with Jody. He's going
to
win.
These are the guys we like to talk to. You know?
Yeah, that have seen every aspect
My point of bringing all that up is to say, when you talk to someone who's worked at any single distillery for 20, 30, 40 years, always ask them what their daily drinker is, and it's going to be one of these under-the-radar, good value, great
they know.
Tasting product that no one's heard of. Because, you know, when you're out there spending your own money, You mm-hmm. walk in, you want the best for the best for the least you can spend.
Well, that is not always the best.
That brings the question, you know, to the forefront. You know, do you actually spend your own money on whiskey, or
you don't? I actually do. Be totally honest with you.
Yeah, I do too.
Okay. You
know, well, people think that we get bourbon all the time, but
right?
I can't just say, "Hey, send me a case of Parker's over," or they have any. Allocated stuff.
I'm just looking for a bottle.
You know, stuff that I do tastings with, I sample those out and have samples. Yeah. But for the most part, we go into liquor stores like everybody else. We work for a family-owned company. They're not handing it out. Like Pez,
skateboarder friendly.
There you go. Well, that makes sense. That brings it all back around to it. Yeah.
But that's hard to beat. Just that Evan Williams 1780 small batch.
And what's the price point on the Evan Williams?
That's about for a 750 of that. It's about $20.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Sometimes a little bit less, depending on the market that you're in. Yeah.
Quality
pour is excellent.
Right. Puts it up in the close to the.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
But one thing we did, though, we bumped it up to 90 proof.
Yeah.
And I think it made all the difference.
Yeah, a little punch there. Yeah.
A little bit more.
Yeah.
So that's kind of our secret sauce is from my viewpoint. I went to University of Kentucky, and I graduated with a 2.6 cumulative. So the way I look at things is a little different. And I spent 20 years on the road as a stand-up comedian. So from 1985 to 2005, I was working the road. So I did the Comedy Corner in Tampa Theater. I played the Tampa Theater.
Wow, that's
used
a big
to have
venue.
A Comedy Corner right there on Del Mabry.
There was a little
comedy club right there.
Yeah,
and they had this comedy club in West Palm Beach too.
Wow,
Phantasma Productions. That was the one. That was like my home club, man. I was living down there.
We got you.
But the way as a comedian, you gotta edit your jokes. You gotta get it down to things. So what I describe Heaven Hill. Longer, stronger. You want to know about Heaven Hill? Longer, stronger. So we typically keep our whiskeys in the barrel a little bit longer or a lot longer than our main competitors.
Okay.
Because that's the most expensive ingredient in making whiskey.
Time.
Mm-hmm. You know, barrels are expensive, grain's expensive, warehouses are expensive,
space.
But nothing like time, man. You know, if you, let's say Marriott opened a $250 million hotel in downtown Tampa. And on opening night, they locked the doors and didn't sell their first hotel room for 4 years.
Oof.
That's making whiskey, right?
Yeah.
So when Jody makes whiskey here with his team, you know, Will J. and
James,
they're not going to know what it's going to taste like for 4 years. Because that's, you know, they're going to taste every once in a while. But, you know, we're not going to bring anything out for 6 years, at least.
Right.
So that's a long time. So you've got to. So we take longer. Our main competitors, they're owned by stockholders, and stockholders are like people on that J.G. Wentworth commercial. You know, it's my money, and I
want
it now.
Right? Yeah.
So you know, they have to. You know, we don't have that, so we just take longer. And then one way to give yourself a raise in the whiskey business, the lowest you can put anything in a bottle is 80 proof.
Mm.
So when you look at some of my main competitors, they're 4 years old, 80 proof.
Yep.
And then we're
basic.
5 years old, 86 proof for Evan Williams. Our small batch is a little older than that and 90 proof. And then we get to 100 and 110 and 100 barrel proof pretty quick.
Yeah.
So less water you put in, the longer you age it. Does that make our whiskey better? No. Does it taste different? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Can I say your favorite?
Yes, you can.
It must be a
profit on the second pour.
That's right.
So
if you have a bar or restaurant, you know, we're in the bourbon business, not the bourbon charity. And a lot of our customers are in the bar and restaurant business, not the bar and restaurant charity. I mean, the second time they touch a bottle, if they're getting $10 for a bourbon and Coke or a bourbon and ginger, second time they touch a lot of our bottles, they're making money. And a lot of our competitors can't say that.
Yeah.
So that's where we show up with great
repeat
products
customers.
At a great price because some of these are under the radar. We don't spend any money on Mellow Corn or Evan Williams.
We've had labels since the 50s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the right point of 1945. Copyright 1945.
Yeah.
Never seen a different label on.
No, I haven't. Yeah, those are both good starters. That brings us, I guess, to the Square Six.
The Square Six.
Yeah, so yeah. Square Six. I'll let Jody take
over.
Sure,
I know a lot about the Square Six.
Oh, yeah.
This is all new to us.
All right. So Jody's the Square Six was actually made here.
2013 November. I was here that night.
Okay.
Took a bath and mash that night because one of the lines were stopped up. We had to clean it up so we could get steel.
It took forever that night.
Oh, my God.
Like 11 o'clock. Parker and you and everybody down there. I got impatient. I left a couple times.
But anyway, so this is our Square Six. We did bourbon. So here at the Bourbon Experience, we actually do everything off pot stills. Mm-hmm. So it's a pot still run. We actually do everything by hand. We do everything. We do batch distilling.
All right, folks, we're going to wrap part one of our interview with Bernie and Jody right there. We will bring to you part two in the next several weeks. So keep an eye and ear out for that episode. Again, follow us on social media, all our accounts, buy our merch on Amazon. We appreciate any feedback you can give us. We look forward to it. And until next time, giddy up and enjoy.